Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents North America's Forgotten Past. By W. Michael Gear and Kathleen O'Neill Gear. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Elizabeth Jernigan, Bradley Smith, Michael Glenn, Nick DePinto, Gregory Gorton, Larissa Gallagher, Patrick Bussink, Joseph Thornhill, Daniel Sontag, Scott McCormick, Joe Brack, Kimberly Gilbert, Ren Casey, Gary Tells, Margie Tompros, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, and Barbara Pinellini. Book 5, People of the Sea, Part 2.
Kestrel stood in the mouth of the rock shelter and studied the hazy white veil that wavered and flowed across the horizon. Winterboy had returned with such strength that he amazed her. The mother, as Sunchaser called the ocean, lay calm and quiet beneath, her voice a bare whisper of waves, as though she still slept. The smooth surface of the water reflected the gray, opalescent sheen of the stormy air. Kestrel filled her lungs, enjoying the tangy scent of salt mixed with the musk of the shoreline. Her fingers moved absently over the seashells that covered the front of the shirt Sunchaser had given her. He stood so much taller than she that the fringes on his shirt fell below her knees. She'd cut off 2 hands' worth of leather from the sleeves so they would fit. Kestrel had risen at the same time as Sunchaser, 2 hands of time ago. While he had gone searching the forest above for spirit plants, she'd located a rill of snowmelt cascading down the rock. She'd bathed in that icy splash and washed her long hair. Then she had returned to comb it dry before the low flames of the fire. Clean and shining in the flickering firelight, it hung black and glistening over her shoulders. In the rear of the shelter, Cloud Girl slept on a soft pile of elk hides. Kestrel had fed her when she'd first awakened, and Cloud Girl had gone right back to sleep. Lately, the baby had been sleeping more, crying less, and just sitting propped up in her rabbit fur sack for long periods, playing with Helper, twining her fists in his tail or clutching at his mange-naked ears. The dog seemed to encourage the attention, staring at the infant with soft brown eyes, periodically thrusting his nose into Cloud Girl's chubby fingers. Even Kestrel missed the dog when he was gone, as now, out hunting with Sunchaser. She turned her gaze back to the fluttering dance of the falling flakes beyond the entrance.
Won't the snow ever stop?
Kestrel looked back toward the fire, entranced by the weaving dance that licked up around the wood. A small basket sat by the fire. Woven of willow bark, it had green and red geometric designs on the lid. She had noticed it last night. Sunchaser had moved the basket when he'd begun preparing dinner and had handled it as though it contained something very precious and fragile. Curious, Kestrel knelt and removed the lid. A single yellow ant crawled across the sand inside, its antennae wiggling. In the center of the basket, a long quartzite knife lay on a folded piece of deer hide. The knife had a greenish-gray blade, the color of the ocean. She started to replace the lid and saw another ant clinging to its underside. She peered at it speculatively, then resealed the basket.
Ants? What could he want with ants?
They're very useful. They can teach you everything there is to know.
Sunchaser entered the rock shelter with the hind quarter of a deer slung over his shoulder. He headed straight for the fire. Helper trotted at his heels, ears up, tail wagging when he spied Kestrel.
I found this little doe at the edge of the cypress grove.
Sunchaser unrolled a hide and laid the quarter down on it. A thick layer of fat coated the deer's rump.
She stood perfectly still, staring into my eyes while I darted her.
She's fat for so early in the spring. Where's the rest of the carcass?
I left it hanging in a tree. Hopefully it's high enough to keep most predators from trying to reach it, and it will stay cool up there.
Yes, especially if the storm continues. Will the snow blow into drifts in the forest here, as it does in the highlands of the marsh country?
No, here on the coast such a thing is rare. This snow is melting almost as fast as it falls, though the water in our boiling bag will probably freeze tonight.
Helper ran across the cave and laid down beside Cloud Girl with his muzzle on the foot of her rabbit fur sack. Sunchaser crouched across the blaze from Kestrel and dug a handful of fresh tree buds from his coat pocket.
What are those?
Poplar buds.
I've never eaten poplar buds. Are they good?
Pretty bitter. You can eat some if you wish, but I'm going to make a salve for your wounds from the rest of them. They have the power to cure.
Oh, I see. In my clan, we use aspen buds for the same thing, and to bring down fever.
We also use aspen buds when they're available.
Kestrel watched as Sunchaser pulled his sleeve down over his hand and used it to tip one of the hot rocks that formed the fire ring. He turned it over, revealing the flat surface, then piled the buds atop it. He drew his knife from his belt pouch and swiveled around to trim a thick strip of fat from the deer quarter.
You're going to melt the fat with the buds?
The fat helps on its own, and it also makes a paste to keep the healing power of the buds in the wound. If you'll pull a long stick from the woodpile, I'll cut you a steak. She was a dry doe. The meat should be succulent and sweet. Tender, too, since she wasn't more than 2 cycles old. Besides, you need to renew your strength. You've had a hard journey.
You're not eating? Again? Are you fasting for a reason?
Yes.
Kestrel frowned, but did as he instructed, and placed a long stick at his feet while he sliced into the rich red meat. He skewered a thick steak on the end of the stick and handed it to her. Kestrel carefully propped her stick away from the flames to keep the wood from burning through. Kestrel couldn't stop her mouth from watering as the meat browned and the rich aroma filled the air.
I haven't had venison for 6 or 7 moons, since last autumn. It smells so good.
It's difficult to hunt when you're on the run.
Sunchaser used 2 sticks like tongs to pull the stone away from the fire so that it could cool and the salve would steep. The mixture had turned a pale green color. Kestrel removed her steak from the flames and propped it against the woodpile to cool off.
Has Cloud Girl been asleep ever since I left?
Yes. I don't understand it. She's calmed down since we've been here. She used to wake me 3 or 4 times at night, wanting to be fed. Last night she woke me only once. Then I fed her again just after you left this morning.
She probably sleeps more soundly here. The rhythm of the waves is soothing.
Yes, it is. I knew it would be.
Do you want to talk about it?
No, I can't. Not yet.
Sunchaser inclined his head understandingly, and Kestrel turned to pull her steak from its stick. She ate slowly, relishing the wonderful flavor. Her fingers quickly became covered with warm grease. The last time she'd had venison, Ice Plant had brought it to her in the middle of the night. Rain had been pattering on the grass thatching of the lodge and slapping into the puddles in the path. He'd been laughing. She finished her steak in silence.
Here, let me pour you a cup of tea. You can sip it while I tend your wounds.
Without waiting for her to answer, he rose and picked up a horn cup. He filled it from the gut bag on the tripod and brought it to her.
You'll have to sit closer to the fire. I'll need the light.
While he went to scoop up a handful of the poplar bud paste, Kestrel moved to the southern side of the fire, out of the smoke, and sat down cross-legged. Sunchaser came over and knelt before her. Gently, he brushed the hair away from her forehead and frowned at the knife gash.
The wound has been invaded by evil spirits. This will hurt.
I'm expecting it too.
When he began dabbing on the warm salve, Kestrel's belly knotted, told her to pull away, not to let a man touch her. Not ever again.
Iceplant died because he touched me.
But she couldn't move. Weeks had passed since anyone had touched her with such tenderness, and she craved it desperately. Muscles that had stiffened with tension began to let go. Her lungs breathed easier. She wondered about that. Her flesh responded to his gentleness as though it recognized that touch. She found herself trembling. Unsteadily, she set the horn cup of tea down at her side. Sunchaser lowered his hand.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was hurting you that much.
No, you're not. Can you put some of the salve on the wound on my shoulder, too?
Of course.
She unlaced the front of her seashell-trimmed dress and lowered the hide to bare her left shoulder. Sunchaser's face darkened. Kestrel looked down. Her stomach churned at the sight. It had been hurting, yes, but she'd never taken the time to examine it. A scab had formed over a swollen red lump. Pus oozed around the edges of the crust.
It may not have hurt when I touched your forehead, but this certainly will. Brace yourself.
Sunchaser had barely touched the wound when a bolt of white-hot pain went through her.
What are the yellow ants for? You said they were very useful.
I'm afraid that you're going to find out tonight. I can't wait any longer. I fasted for 3 days. It's time. You can help me if you want to.
He prodded around the edges of her wound, determining the extent of the infection. And then he pinched the enraged flesh to drain it.
Sorry. That's it, I think.
What do I have to do to help you?
Just keep an eye on me. Come if I call out to you. I've never performed this ritual alone before. I don't know exactly what might happen to me.
What does the ritual entail? I mean, what should I expect?
I can't really tell you what to expect. I've witnessed others undertake the ant ordeal many times, but each dreamer reacts differently to the power. Some weep through the night, some writhe on the ground, some just stare into the fire. And sometimes, Kestrel, the dreamer dies.
The ants have that much power?
Kestrel laced up her dress.
Oh, yes. I saw a young girl perish once. It was terrible. After that, the Talf banned young women from participation in the ritual.
The Talf? What is that?
Sunchaser rose and stood quietly looking down at her.
It's a power society. A very old one. The elders of the society claim that Wolf Dreamer himself was the first shaman of the Talf. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Can't you ask Wolf Dreamer? In your visits to the Land of the Dead, wouldn't he tell you?
I need to begin my preparations soon. You won't mind, will you?
No. Tell me what to do to help you.
Catchstraw padded through the forest, his pointed ears pricked for danger. The scents that pervaded the world astonished him. He prowled with his long nose to the ground, his tail down so as not to attract attention to himself. A doe and a fawn had trotted down this trail just before him, and a hare had hopped across the path to get to the meadow below. Oh, he could see their tracks, of course, imprinted clearly in the snow, but they held no interest for him. The smell, however, made his blood rush. The doe was heavy with fawn, and the yearling buck fawn that accompanied her had been wandering in the shallows of a pond, eating ferns. The buck had sated himself and was drowsy, longing to sleep. He trotted far behind his mother, too confident for his own good. Catchstraw wrinkled his long nose, exposing his teeth. On occasion, they felt like human teeth rather than wolf's recurved canines. He shoved the thought from his mind. The buck would be an easy target, either tonight or in another moon, when the doe finally chased him away, forcing him to fend for himself while she searched out a safe niche in the forest and gave birth to her new baby. Effortlessly, Catchstraw leaped a fallen log and veered off on a wide, beaten-down mammoth trail. The powerful muscles rippling beneath his black fur thrilled him. What strength and lusty virility! No human could ever understand this power. He wondered why he'd never considered taking the path of the witch before. It offered so much more than the dreamer's path did. As a witch, he could order power to comply with his demands, rather than having power use him for its own foolish ends. Dreamers were idiots. When the trail sloped down a steep hill, he broke into a careless run. What animal could catch him, even if it heard or scented him? Perhaps a short-faced bear, maybe a lion or a saber-toothed cat. He couldn't be certain, since he didn't know how fast those animals ran. But he knew his own limits well. And in the body of Direwolf, he could race the wind and win. Catchstraw sprinted to the bottom of the hill and sniffed out a new scent. It made him halt and look around. A woman's scent. And she carried a baby with her. Through his keen night eyes, he could even spot the places where the woman had halted to strip the soft inner bark of aspens to use as an absorbent in the infant's pants. That scent sent his muscles to trembling. He couldn't be certain whether his response came from wolf or human origins. A baby, tiny and vulnerable. Through the overarching branches, he could make out the faint, silverish gleam of above old man, though he couldn't see his eye. He looked over his shoulder and studied his back trail. He scented the wind. The mountain mahogany, willow, and other bushy shrubs obscured the curving trail, but something moved out there, something clever and quiet. An uneasy feeling of being pursued disturbed him. The wind blew in from the ocean, carrying his own pungent scent back up the mountain to any animal that cared to lift its nose. He narrowed his eyes, glaring, growling as he searched the forest for any sign of a stalker. What would a woman be doing up here? No scent of man accompanied her. A woman alone with a baby? Strange. Catchstraw trotted up onto a rocky point and peered through the weave of trees. Mother Ocean spread before him like a vast black hide waving in the wind. Following the mingled scents of woman and mammoth, Catchstraw loped down onto the flat terrace of the sea cliffs. Ahead of him, he could see the orange gleam of a fire reflecting from the water's surface far below. Catchstraw trotted on, down the fir-clotted slope and along the edge of the cliff. Kestrel sat on the pile of furs in the rear of the shelter, rocking Cloud Girl in her arms. Night had fallen. The orange glow of the fire washed the inside of the rock shelter, throwing Sunchaser's rumpled shadow across the back wall. He knelt at the mouth of the shelter, creating a ground painting around his feet. The circle spread a full body's length in diameter and glittered wildly in the firelight. When Sunchaser had finished, he returned to the center of the circle and filled his hands from the pile of crushed charcoal there. He began drawing the inner circle. Black and small, it left him barely enough room to sit cross-legged within its confines. Kestrel watched in fascination. Her own people didn't have this ritual. His movements mimicked a dance that she felt she should have known but couldn't place. A powerful ceremony, an ancient ritual. Its beauty and symmetry reached straight to the depths of her soul. Sunchaser wore only a breech clout. His broad chest was heavily muscled, and a single tattoo, that of a coiled serpent, adorned the space between his breasts. The serpent's tongue flicked out and forked into the spreading branches of a tree that stretched to his collarbones. When Sunchaser had finished painting the black inner circle, he rested for a moment. Kestrel lowered her eyes. Cloud Girl had fallen asleep. Very carefully, she laid her daughter down on the hides and brought one skin up to cover the baby to her chin. Sunchaser had now filled his hands with crushed red sandstone and had begun to quarter the circles, drawing one wavy line on the north-south axis, then another from the east to the west. Kestrel recognized those symbols, the two giant snakes that held up the earth. Sunchaser rose to his feet and bowed his head reverently. His white braid shone as though coated with liquid silver. He looked oddly unreal standing there against the background of falling snow, as if his body belonged more to that glittering haze than to the solid world of soil, water, and sky. Slowly he turned.
Kestrel, please bring me my basket, the sack of eagle down, and a cup of water.
She gathered the things he asked for and carried them to him. He walked to the edge of the outer white circle to take them from her hands. His fingers brushed hers softly during the exchange.
Thank you.
Kestrel nodded and backed away, sinking down by the fire where it was warm. He watched her until she had pulled up her knees and wrapped her arms around them. Then he retreated to the center of the inner circle and lifted his basket of ants. He held the basket up to each of the four directions of the world. Sunchaser carefully constructed a bed of eagle down, like a tiny nest, in his left palm, and placed five yellow ants in the center. He folded the down around the ants in a protective cocoon and tucked the wad into his mouth. Lifting the cup of water, he swallowed it down. He sank to his knees and bent forward, holding his stomach as though in pain. Kestrel sat perfectly still, not wanting to distract him, but her forehead furrowed with wonder. Were the ants biting him inside? Sunchaser's mouth tensed. He slumped backward to a sitting position and reached into his basket to draw out his long quartzite knife. He gripped it tightly with both hands and squeezed his eyes closed. He froze in that position, facing east. Kestrel waited for a full hand of time before he stirred again. The snow was falling more heavily now, forming an unbroken white wall beyond the shelter. Opening his eyes, Sunchaser looked straight through Kestrel, as though she didn't exist. No expression enlivened his face. His craggy features could have been chiseled from granite. Like an old man with a disease of the joints, he haltingly leaned forward and lowered his knife to the soft surface of the sandstone floor. At the point where the red snake on the east-west axis cut through the black inner circle, he began drawing a wide arc. At first, Kestrel couldn't figure out what he was doing. Then she noticed that he'd carved a circle and had proceeded to fill it with a complex sequence of seemingly unrelated lines. It looked like a labyrinth, or a maze. With unblinking intensity, Sunchaser carved twisting line within twisting line, as though following a path of his own making, seeking the way to a center point not yet defined. He stopped abruptly and redrew a line, then drew over it again, etching the turn ever deeper into the stone floor. Suddenly, Kestrel saw that Sunchaser looked confused or maybe frustrated. Her eyes went from the maze to Sunchaser's face and back again, not understanding. Without taking his eyes from the carving in the stone, Sunchaser groped for his basket and pulled out the half-buried square of deer hide. He unfolded it and smoothed away the sand and wrinkles. Kestrel could see another maze drawn on it. Was it the maze that Wolfdreamer had given him? The one he carried with him when he went to the villages to talk about the mammoth spirit dance? It must be. Sunchaser seemed to be comparing the mazes. He frowned and shook his head. When he released his breath, he bent to the maze on the floor again, carefully retracing the old line. This time he drew it a little longer, so that the line curved up around the interior of the circle, paralleling another line, then angling away from it. At the point of divergence, he stopped and closed his eyes for a moment, as though he didn't know which direction to take. He tried again, retracing the path through the maze, halting at the same point of divergence. His hand shook so badly that he drew it back into his lap, put the knife aside, and curled his fingers into a fist. Finally, Sunchaser looked up, as though at Kestrel, but she couldn't be certain that he saw her. His eyes had a ghostly look, seeing through her to something far away in another world. Then, like a cat going to sleep, he curled on his side in the middle of the ground painting, his back to her, and Kestrel saw his shoulders shake. She got on her knees, not sure of what to do. He'd told her not to speak to him unless he called out, but on coyote silent feet, she crept forward to the edge of the white circle. When he heard her, he raised his head, and Kestrel saw the tears in his eyes. She stepped into the circle and knelt beside him.
Sunchaser, what can I do to help you? Do you need something? I could warm you some tea.
His arms went suddenly around her waist, and before she knew it, he had his head in her lap, his fingers tugging desperately at her sleeves.
I can't get through. Trap. The turn is a trap.
A trap?
I keep falling, going around in circles. Can't escape. Wing walls follow me in. Then I fall. The blackness swallows me in. Lost. Nowhere to turn.
Kestrel's eyes widened. Sunchaser couldn't lose the way through the maze. What would happen if something so terrible turned out to be true? People everywhere relied on Sunchaser to know the minds of the spirits. She gazed down at that white head writhing in her lap, and her heart went out to him. His name carried almost as much power as Wolf Dreamer's. No, he had not lost his way. That would be unthinkable. Sunchaser had just taken too many ants. He had too much of their poison in his system, and it had affected his ability to dream.
You just need to try again. It will work next time.
No, not until I understand. You see, it's the problem of the wife of the invisible warrior. My passion to see. I've killed what I love and want most. But how? How do I give up my eyes?
He nuzzled his cheek against her skirt and went deathly still. The large hands that gripped her sleeves turned as rigid as stone. Was this paralysis part of the ant ordeal? He hadn't told her this might happen. What could she do? Frightened, Kestrel put a hand on his shoulder and realized in shock that he was crying. She stroked Sunchaser's white hair.
It's all right, Sunchaser. You'll find the way. I know you will.
No, I can't. The spirits, they've forsaken me. I don't understand it.
Why would they forsake you? You're their dreamer, their chosen.
Not anymore. I'm lost. Lost.
His arms tightened powerfully around her, and he dragged her to the ground with him, stretching out, obliterating much of the painting. He buried his face in the wealth of her hair, his forehead resting warmly against her cheek.
I don't want to be alone. Stay here with me, Kestrel. Please, don't leave me.
I won't leave. I promise.
Sunchaser rolled to his side, sick to his stomach. The elk hide that covered him slipped down to his waist. He felt weak and bewildered, tired to his bones. He remembered little of last night, except the terrible pain when the ants were biting him, and a brief period of euphoria before he had attempted the maze. And he remembered that he'd failed. Far below, a calm, deep blue sea spread beyond the thin veneer of snow that covered the shore. The lavender glow of dawn haloed everything, the trees, rocks, waves. The storm had broken. Sunlight poured through gaps in the drifting clouds. Sunchaser lay unmoving, trying to muster the strength to rise. His heart pounded nauseatingly. He rolled to his opposite side, and nausea overwhelmed him. Kestrel ran across the rock shelter and held his head expertly while the world swam around him in a blur of brown and blue.
Lie down, Sunchaser.
Kestrel ran to pick up two thin pieces of stone and scrape up the mess he'd made.
There's no need for you to get up.
He obeyed, stretching out on his back. Kestrel tossed the dirtied stones over the edge and drew the elk hide up to cover his bare chest, then went back to the fire. He watched her as she went about making tea. Her hair swung around her like a black curtain as she moved. Another memory from last night. Kestrel in his arms.
Kestrel? I don't remember much about last night. The memories from the ant ordeal tend to return slowly, but thank you.
For what?
Well, I'm not certain, but I think I may have asked you for things that you... I think you helped me more than I know.
She walked across the shelter and set a cup of steaming tea down beside him. He raised himself on one elbow and tried to sip from it.
I didn't do anything, Sanchiser. I wish I could have helped you more.
More?
Yes.
She knelt at his side, and the longest strands of her hair brushed the floor. Sitting there like that, she looked so young, so innocent, and half afraid.
You kept saying that you couldn't find your way through the maze, and I...
Kestrel's mouth hung open, as though she feared she'd said something terribly wrong. She raised a hand to her lips.
I'm sorry. Did I...
No, it's not you. It's me. Go on, please. Tell me what I said.
You said that the turn was a trap. That wing walls funneled you to it. And then you fell, and blackness swallowed you up. Then you said something about having nowhere to turn, about being lost.
Yes, that's the way it feels. What else did I say?
You said that the spirits had forsaken you, but of course that's not true. The spirits would never forsake you. You're their greatest dreamer.
Am I?
Of course.
Is that all, Kestrel?
Yes. At least that's everything important I can remember.
Sunchaser stared down into the pale green liquid in his cup.
You're very kind to have taken care of me last night. I'm sorry if I... made you feel awkward at any time.
No, I never felt awkward. And I'm good at taking care of people.
Yes, you are good at taking care of people. Too bad your husband didn't realize it.
He did, in the beginning.
Did you love him?
She glanced up suddenly, as though surprised.
Oh yes, very much. I would have done anything for him. For a time, I even tried to bury my own being, to deny my nature, so I could be exactly what he wanted. I thought it would make him love me back.
But it didn't?
No.
If you had become exactly what he wanted, he would have changed his mind and wanted you to be someone else.
How do you know?
I've seen his kind before. Too often. What you must do now, Kestrel, is to forget about him. You're beginning a new life. You have new friends and family.
I can't forget. He's still out there somewhere, Sunchaser, and he's crazy. He will find me, even if it takes the rest of his life.
Night before last, you tossed and turned in your sleep. You even cried out once. Are you still having nightmares about him?
They've lost some of their power. Now when I'm dreaming, I usually know it's sweat on my face and not rain, like the night when... And I sense that the pressure at my throat is a heavy hide, not a knife. Most of the time, though, I fear it's the nightmares that are real. That my belief that I'm dreaming is only a blinder against the truth. And I'm afraid, Sanchaser, that someday he'll find me and drag me back to the nightmare where the rain never ends and he's hitting me.
Is that what made you turn against him?
The beatings? No. No, I thought they were my fault. That he beat me because I was bad. I turned to Ice Plant out of loneliness. I just couldn't bear to be by myself anymore. It wasn't the beatings.
Sunchaser stared silently down at the beach. He could see her, young, beautiful, always crouching in her husband's shadow, afraid to breathe lest he think she'd been bad and punish her for it. He could imagine Kestrel retreating more and more into her own soul, cutting herself off from family and friends to keep from making a mistake that would anger her husband. And finally, the loneliness had grown unbearable. That was when she must have sought comfort elsewhere. How different from his own life. Solitude had so many compensations. Friends could tell him all they wanted to about the joys of wife and family. He cherished being alone. Only at such times could he really see the world around him and himself. The distress he experienced from being close to people hindered him for weeks afterward. He always said too much, gave too much, cared too much, for no good reason at all. Such closeness, even for a little while, drained every ounce of his strength until he felt that his soul had detached from his body and gone flying to escape. He put his empty cup down and forced himself to sit up. The cold bit at his bare chest. His belly roiled.
Oh, blessed spirits. I've never understood what the Tau Ceinants. I suffered through the same anguish the last time I tried them.
You mean you couldn't dream?
I mean that all I did was throw up.
I don't think ants are good for you, Sunchaser.
I'm sure you're right.
Kestrel smiled then, and he couldn't help smiling back. She didn't realize it, but she looked very beautiful, with her long hair shining about her face, and dressed in his mammoth spirit dance shirt, which was much too big for her. Sunchaser suspected that she hadn't smiled in a long time.
Sunchaser, I don't know very much about the ant ordeal, but among my clan, when we make a ground painting, someone must erase it the next day, or it will bring bad luck. May I do that for you?
He lifted his brows. No one had ever done it for him. But the way he felt this morning, he certainly couldn't do it himself.
Yes, if you'd like to.
Where should I begin?
With the red serpent lines. You must erase even the places where the colors have been smeared or are gone. Pretend the lines are still there, because they are, in the spirit world. Work your way outward. The serpent lines, then the black circle, then the white.
Erase it in reverse of the way you laid it down? Yes, I understand.
She rose and went to the smudged circle. First, she bowed to Mother Ocean and lifted her face to Brother Sky. Bending over, she began carefully obliterating his painting with her hands. It astonished him. She must have memorized the process last night, because she erased the painting in exactly the reverse of the way he had laid it down. And her touch was like that of a mother stroking a sick baby's face.
You like paintings?
My whole world is painting and dying. At least it was. I haven't done either in a long time. I miss the colors. They bring my soul to life.
I know what you mean. I feel the same way.
In that position, bending at the waist, her knees locked, she looked startlingly like a child playing in the dirt. Everything about her affected him with the terrifying sweetness of a spirit plant in his veins. When she had finished, she wiped her hands on her moccasins and walked back to him.
Could you eat something? I gathered snails from the rocks at dawn this morning, and I could cut a steak from the deer haunch, roast it slowly.
Steak would certainly kill me. And snails? I'm sure the spirits would strike me dead if I touched a single one.
Another cup of tea, then?
That I could face.
She retrieved his horn cup. Deftly, she tilted the bag to refill it. Sunchaser lowered himself to the ground and pulled the alkide up over his chest. A chill had begun to eat at him. He didn't recall having been this sick or weak after his last ant ordeal, but he'd had good plume to chant and sing for him. Kestrel brought the tea and set it down by his shoulder, then backed away two paces.
Is there something else you want to ask me, Kestrel?
No, I was just... Sunchaser, I know you do not feel well, but the snow has stopped. I was wondering when you might be able to take me to OtterClan Village. I won't feel safe until I'm there.
Kestrel glanced over her shoulder to the pile of hides where her daughter lay, but she made no attempt to go to her. She stood waiting for Sunchaser's response.
Tomorrow. We'll leave at dawn.
Thank you.
Go comfort your daughter, Kestrel. I'm fine. Cloud Girl needs you much more than I do.
He watched Kestrel dart over and pick up Cloud Girl. The baby smiled toothlessly at her, then lifted her gaze to Sunchaser, and her little face slackened gravely. A light flared in those huge eyes, something that drew Sunchaser like a starving beast to food. He felt oddly as though the child were speaking to him, and as though in that silent voice he heard a dread to match his own. It whispered through his soul like a cold wind.
Kestrel, was it thundering when she was born?
Yes. It was one of the worst storms I'd ever seen. Thunder and a deluge of rain. Lightning struck the bluff over my head while I was in labor with her.
Kestrel sat down on the pile of furs and unlaced the front of her shirt, pulling it back so she could feed the infant. Cloud Girl craned her neck to keep staring at Sunchaser.
Why do you ask?
In your dreams, Kestrel, have you ever called out to me? Called my name, as though you needed my help?
No, I don't think so. Why?
Sunchaser lifted his cup of tea and sipped at it. Cloud Girl moved her head a little more so she could still peer at Sunchaser while clamping her mouth around Kestrel's nipple. pictures appeared suddenly on the undercoat of Sunchaser's soul, like tongues of fire licking up around long-dead coals. Strange images of overpowering darkness and interconnected labyrinths that spiraled out into infinity. Flashes of blinding light.
Sunchaser, what is it?
I think I finally understand why Mammoth Above brought us together.
Oxbaum tugged his robes up around his throat and frowned at the oak and pine forest that surrounded him. What a strange place. Whereas Mother Ocean lived and breathed, always in motion, always singing, the mountain's hushed stillness reminded him of death. Frost glittered on the leaves of the trees and on the grass. The night breeze had a bite that ate at his bones. Piles of furs marked the places where the rest of the villagers slept. Oxbaum had allowed Catchstraw to choose the village site, but had immediately regretted it when the dreamer had pointed to this tree-covered hilltop. People had been so exhausted that they'd just thrown down their furs and dropped into a deep slumber. But what a sight! Half of the trees here had been blasted by lightning. And where was the water? They would have to hike for half a day to get to a river that had any fish. In the summer, when the droughts came upon them, they would either spend all of their time hauling water, or they'd dry up and blow away. A ridiculous sight. There'd be few animals to hunt up here on this wind-blown hilltop. What did Catchstraw expect them to eat? Grass and twigs? Catchstraw had changed. Oxbaum couldn't quite put his finger on it, but the man had grown menacing, almost sinister. Every wave of his hand now exuded threat. A little way from him, Horseweed lay sleeping with his head on his arm. Black hair covered half of his young face, but Oxbaum could see the closed eye and his grandson's pug nose. Horseweed had a serious twist to his mouth, as though dreaming of frightening things.
Oh, how you've changed, my grandson.
Horseweed had grown up in the blink of an eye. Oxbaum had first noticed the change when Horseweed returned with Sunchaser. But his grandson's maturity had been steadily growing since then. What had the dreamer said to cause Horseweed to begin looking at life so deeply? To turn Horseweed from a boy to a man? No one else recognized his grandson's new status, because Horseweed had yet to seek a vision or kill a mammoth. But Oxbaum did. Almost unconsciously, he'd begun delegating more authority to Horseweed, asking things of him that he would never have asked a moon ago. Curious the effect Sunchaser had on people.
I wish you were here with us right now, Sunchaser.
Suddenly, Oxbaum saw movement from the corner of his eye. He craned his neck to look down the western slope they'd climbed earlier in the day. Four men walked out of the mottled forest shadows. Their dark faces gleamed in the starlight. Oxbaum cupped a hand to his mouth.
Hello! Who are you?
I'm Harrier, from the Blackwater Draw Clan. My brothers are traveling with me. Are you the Otter Clan?
Yes. How do you know that?
We followed your tracks from your former village site. We've been trying to find you for days.
What for?
The yelling had brought the entire village awake. As people roused, Oxbaum saw Horseweed grab his atlatl and quiver of darts, peer down the trail, then throw off his robes and get to his feet. Other men rose and walked forward with weapons in hand. Horseweed came to stand beside Oxbaum.
Who are they, Grandfather? Do you know them?
No, I don't think so.
The four men crested the hill. They were tall youths, burly, with atlatls in their hands and quivers slung over their broad shoulders. The leader, probably Harrier, had a massive brow and a flat nose. He walked straight to Oxbaum and took his hand in a firm grip.
You are Oxbaum, aren't you?
Yes. Do I know you?
Harrier let his hand drop to his side.
I met you when I was a boy, Oxbaum, but it's been 15 cycles. I wouldn't expect you to remember. Please, talk with us. We're looking for a woman.
What woman?
Her name is Catchstraw.
Harrier's brothers crowded around, their young faces hard.
She murdered our brother.
What is it? What's happening? Somebody should have awakened me.
Oxbaum glanced over to see Catchstraw pulling on his moccasins, anger on his face. He jerked on his deerhide coat.
Yuckathorn! Dizzy Seal, where are you? Why did no one inform me that visitors had arrived?
Harrier's eyes narrowed speculatively, and Oxbaum placed a friendly hand on his shoulder.
Kestrel, yes. I have heard that name before. Come, sit down. I'll build up my fire and we'll talk.
The Star People called across the blackness, worrying, terrified that Mother Ocean and Above Old Man had lost control of the situation on the world below.
Why aren't you already down there, boy? Get moving! I thought you wanted to be a great dreamer so you could help her.
The boy closed his eyes in shame.
I haven't been called yet. The man says it will happen soon, though. Very soon.
He's afraid. He'll never be able to help anybody.
He's too young. You can't expect him to know anything.
The boy is a coward.
A dreamer? Ridiculous.
The boy huddled in upon himself, peered at his own inner light that shimmered a pure white.
I can do it! I can sew!
Can you, boy?
The man's words fell around the boy like handfuls of stardust.
Being a dreamer is very hard. Harder than you could ever imagine.
I can do it, man. I just wish I knew exactly what I'm supposed to accomplish in that dead body. What should I do, man? How should I deal with this wicked human?
Tell him what he wants to know.
You can't mean that. More than anything, he wants to know where my mother is. You're not asking me to betray my mother. Man, are you? Man? Man, please answer me! I must know the answer to that question. I can't betray my mother!
Is that what frightens you most?
Yes! Of course it is! She is my hope! My only hope!
Then you have answered your own question. Boy, haven't I told you that every dreamer must face his greatest fear before he can dream the world back into balance?
Catchstraw studied the people near their crackling fires, cooking food, getting ready to begin a day of hard labor, building lodges and unpacking belongings. The brothers, who'd arrived around midnight, sat in a knot by their own small fire on the far western side of the hilltop. Harrier, the oldest, kept glancing speculatively at Catchstraw, as though he wanted to come over and speak to him but hadn't yet gained the courage to, probably because Harrier had witnessed the people's reverence and caution around Catchstraw last night.
Well, you should be timid about approaching me, boy. I have more power than you could ever understand.
The fact had begun to seep in. He had actually started seeing differently. Even now, he appraised people through the eyes of a predator, a hunter looking to kill. He could recognize people by their distinctive scents. Pregnant women bore a peculiarly musky odor. They were easy to identify, even those who did not yet know about their pregnancy themselves. Already, he could distinguish a certain earthiness clinging to some women, but not to others. He thought it indicated that they would give birth to sons, but he couldn't be sure yet. He'd have to wait to verify his suspicions. Catchstraw folded his arms smugly. He expected in a few moons to be as feared and renowned as old Cactus Lizard, though, of course, he'd never boast of his witchery to anyone. He wanted people to believe that his power came from dreaming. Dreamers stayed alive a great deal longer than witches did. Harrier stood up by his fire and stretched his stiff back muscles. He said a few quiet words to his brothers and walked away from them, heading bravely toward Catchstraw. Catchstraw observed his approach with narrowed eyes and lifted his hooked nose to sniff the air. The boy smelled like a predator, too. That made Catchstraw wary.
Good day to you, dreamer.
Harrier bowed respectfully.
What do you want, boy?
If I'm disturbing you, please tell me and I will return later.
No, go on. I'd just as soon get it over with. What do you want?
One of the old women told me last night that you were a dreamer. I was hoping I might be able to talk with you about some of your visions.
Which visions?
As you know, my brothers and I are looking for this Kestrel. Have you seen anything of her? Or of her crazy husband, Lambkill? Their locations, perhaps?
The only dreams I've had lately are about terrible things happening to Otter Clan Village. You're not the cause of those things, are you?
Me? No, I mean, how could I be?
Doesn't matter. Just see that you're not. Understand, boy?
My brothers and I did not come here to cause you trouble, Dreamer. We want to capture our brother's murderer and go home. That's...
Good. The sooner the better.
May I return to talk to you again after breakfast? Perhaps on full stomachs we'll both be...
You may, but don't disturb me if I'm out in the forest gathering spirit plants. That's a sacred time for me.
I understand.
Harrier bowed once more.
I hope to see you again later. Thank you.
Moist sand squished between Kestrel's toes as she walked barefoot across the beach. A stiff wind tousled her long hair about her shoulders. She saw a Sunchaser, back in camp, holding Cloud Girl while he tended the fire. They had left their rock shelter yesterday, and Sunchaser said they would reach Otter Clan Village tomorrow afternoon. The sudden freedom affected her like a tonic.
Blessed Mother Ocean. Oh, perhaps I should have been praying to you all along. Thank you for making me feel this way.
She hugged herself tightly and basked in the joy that swelled her heart.
I'm going to be happy here. I just know it.
She started walking again, checking each shady place beyond the reach of the salty water for chickweed. The plant grew in thick clumps in the shadows of rocks. It had scraggly branches that ended in tiny white blossoms. Whenever she spotted one, she plucked the entire plant and tucked it into the hide bag tied around her waist. The afternoon sunlight flushed her cheeks with warmth. She fought her own best judgment and deliberately shoved all thoughts of Lambkill from her mind. She just wanted to pretend for a short while, to let her soul believe that she was 13 again and had never married. Mother Ocean rocked turbulently in the high wind. Dark gray swells rolled in one after another, roaring as they curled and crashed, shattering on the beach.
Oh.
Kestrel broke into a run. As fast as the wind, she leaped over anything that lay in her headlong path. She sped down the shore with her hair flying. Sunchaser smiled as he watched from the lodge he had crafted from saltgrass. They had made their camp by a rocky outcrop surrounded by a mixed grove of pine and flowering dogwood trees, where a tiny moss-covered spring bubbled up. Twice the height of a man, the eight rocks of the outcrop formed an irregular semicircle that opened to the sea. The rocks had been smoothed and shaped by thousands of cycles of wind and rain until they seemed to have faces. Eerie faces. Sunchaser sensed power here. Faint, old, but here nonetheless. He had the uncomfortable feeling that he was being watched. He had purposely camped early tonight. It might take them another day to reach Otter Clan Village, but at least Kestrel would be rested when she arrived. A moon of exhaustion had sapped her strength. She hadn't complained, but by noon he could tell that she was already getting tired. She'd fallen silent in an effort to hide her hard breathing. With his elk scapula, he scooped a hot stone from the flames and dropped it into the bag. Once the water boiled, he sank back to the sand and gently lowered Cloud Girl to his lap. Her mousehide pacifier had glued itself to the corner of her open mouth. He carefully pulled up the rabbit fur hood and arranged it around Cloud Girl's face to shield her from the chill. Helper lay on the opposite side of the fire, sleeping. He'd tucked his pointed nose into the bits of remaining fur on his tail for warmth. The orange light of the flames reflected in his patchy coat. Behind Helper, Sunchaser had thrown out two piles of sleeping robes. The camp faced north so that he could watch their back trail. He honestly did not believe that her husband could have tracked her through the storms they'd had, but just in case, he kept a lookout. When he glanced up again, Kestrel was heading back toward camp. She walked slowly, as though deep in thought. She folded her arms and tucked her hands into her long sleeves. The seashells on the shirt he'd given her glittered in the late afternoon light. She walked into the half-moon of standing stones and knelt beside Sunchaser to stroke Helper's neck. Helper lifted his head inquiringly and thumped his tail on the ground.
Tonight you're gonna feel better. Just wait. No mange can stand up to a good chickweed poultice.
Should I pull out a wooden bowl for you?
two would be better. That way I can cup one on top of the other.
Sunchaser glanced down at Cloud Girl, taking care not to awaken her as he drew the bowls from his pack and handed them to Kestrel. Unlacing the small bag around her waist, Kestrel tugged out 5 handfuls of scraggly chickweed plants and piled them into one bowl, then turned the other bowl upside down and placed it on top of the first. They didn't fit together very well, but the top bowl would help to contain the steam.
It won't take long.
She used a stick to drag several glowing coals to the edge of the fire pit. Then she covered the coals with a thick layer of sand and set the bowls atop it to heat slowly.
When the plants have cooked down enough, we'll plaster them on Helper's mangy spots.
Helper apparently understood. He wagged his tail again.
It's all right, Helper. You would do the same for me. I know you would.
The dog crawled forward on his belly to lay his head in her lap.
The clams are ready.
Good. I'm starved.
A serenity had entered her eyes. Sunchaser held her gaze for a long while, probing those dark brown depths in search of the soul beneath. It wasn't hard to find. She opened herself to him unabashedly, as though perfectly willing to let him see her many vulnerabilities.
Oh, I'm starving too. I thought you'd never get tired of feeling the sand squishing between your toes. We'll have to use our cups since the bowls are filled with chickweed.
Here, give Cloud Girl to me and I'll put her down on your hides. The hides that you have kindly loaned us.
No, they're your hides. I have plenty without them. Every time I perform a healing, the sick person's family showers me with hides and other gifts. It's actually become a nuisance. I don't know what to do with them all. I usually can't refuse the gifts or I'd insult the givers, so I leave them with my aunt in Brushnut Village. Her lodge is stuffed full.
Sunchaser handed Cloud Girl into Kestrel's waiting arms.
I hate to let go of her. I've held a lot of babies before, but none have affected me the way Cloud Girl does.
Kestrel pulled back one of the hides that formed her bed and placed Cloud Girl in the middle of it.
All babies touch the heart. I think...
No, it's more than that.
Sunchaser crouched before his pack to pull out 2 cups. He set them on the sand and hesitated.
Cloud Girl is special. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes, I think so. If you mean the... I don't even know what to call it. The strange look in her eyes.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Sunchaser dipped his elk scapula into the boiling bag and ladled out 2 cups of steaming clams. He gave one to Kestrel.
Be careful, they're very hot.
She took the cup and set it aside to cool.
Sunchaser, you know more about these things than I do. What do you think that look is?
He stretched out in front of the fire, braced himself on an elbow, and picked up his cup of clams.
I don't know exactly. She's connected to power. I'm not sure how.
Connected to power?
Yes, a lot of children are. It's only as they grow older that they lose their natural ability to touch and hear things beyond this world.
When I first really looked into her eyes, I felt as if my soul had been severed from my body.
I hesitate to say it, but I think that Cloud Girl is going to be a dreamer when she grows up.
Oh, I'd like that. Very much. It will give her the chance to help people. There are so many people who feel lost and confused. They need to know there's someone who cares about them, no matter what they've done. I hope you're right.
Sunchaser's hand halted midway to his mouth. Is that how Kestrel saw him? As someone who cared, no matter what? He lowered the clam back to his cup solemnly. How little the average person understood about dreaming. He did care, very much, but he would have preferred not to. Tending to the needs of others left him feeling bereft and too exhausted to dream. And, as Good Plume had noted, dreaming was what really helped people. He'd known dreamers who had so exhausted themselves in serving others that they'd lost their way to the land of the dead. They'd always ended up hating themselves. Sunchaser sat for so long staring into the fire, remembering those haunted dreamers, thinking about his own problems with the maze, that he missed the brilliant shades of sunset that kindled the heavens.